Here's an easy way for you to publicize Issues Etc. at your church. Go to the promote page of our website, issuesetc.org, and you'll find a short paragraph to include in your weekly church bulletin. Help inform your fellow parishioners about Issues Etc. issuesetc.org. Click promote and copy and paste the text for your church secretary or pastor to include each week in the Sunday bulletin. We update this paragraph weekly. Go to the promote page of our website, issuesetc.org.
With all of the talk of healthcare reform flying around politically in Washington, out in the hinterlands as well, some things do fall through the cracks. And one begins to wonder, especially with prominent, high-profile Roman Catholic politicians, whether or not the things falling through the cracks, genuine Roman Catholic concerns in their rhetoric, is intentional or not. We're going to be talking about the Roman Catholic Church and healthcare reform with Terry Mattingly here for the next half hour of the program, along with some other subjects like why does the Episcopal Church USA get so much media coverage when, in terms of its size, it is dwarfed by things like the Southern Baptist Convention and other mainline Protestant denominations, not to mention the Roman Catholic Church. And we'll also talk about the media coverage of the life and the work of Eunice Kennedy Shriver with Terry Mattingly here in this half hour. Terry Mattingly is director of the Washington Journalism Center at the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities. He writes the weekly On Religion column for the Scripps Howard News Service, and he's author of the book Pop Goes Religion, founder of GetReligion.org. Terry, welcome back.
Good to talk to you.
We do occasionally hear high-profile Roman Catholic politicians calling for health care reform, and they may allude to their church's teaching on justice, healthcare as a basic human right. But are they giving us the full picture of Catholic concern when it comes to healthcare or healthcare reform?
Well, I mean, when you hear Catholic politicians quoting the social teachings of the Church, it does tend to be on the universal care side. And that, of course, I mean, there is no group over the last one or two decades that who have more consistently been in favor of universal healthcare coverage of some kind than the U.S. Catholic bishops. And so there's no question that this is, it's no question where they stand on this. It's the other half of the equation that doesn't seem to make it into the press coverage as much, which is they're standing on, of course, on a lack of funding for abortion, and also for their opposition to restrictions on coverage at the end of on end-of-life issues, on the kind of rationing of health care money, and especially that the state gets to make those decisions. I think it's important to remember, too, though, that the Roman Catholic Church has been at the forefront of the hospice movement. So it's not that the Roman Catholic Church believes that the automatic choice is that you throw as much money as you can to extend life in its final stages if there is no realistic hope. The Catholic Church would be at the right at the forefront of discussions of death with dignity, hospice care, but they would want these decisions made by the families, involved. And frankly, I think that the evidence is that the vast majority of people in America would choose would make those kinds of decisions, in the last 2 months of life or something. What they don't want is a policy like in some nations where you're just simply not eligible for certain forms of cancer treatment if you have to be above 65. Who cares if you're running marathons, at that point? You're above 65. So the Catholics have got, they're very pro on one side of the equation, but they have very serious questions on the other.
Okay, so what do we make of the fact that some of these high-profile Roman Catholic politicians, quite with some alacrity, will cite their Catholic upbringing or the teachings of their church, ancient, that we really need to have this, but they'll leave out those what I think we could call core concerns of the Catholic Church when it comes to people's well-being, like abortion, like end-of-life issues.
As the old saying goes, "Oh, you sweet innocent little lamb." No, honest. I mean, what you're dealing with here, it's like the Catholic voters. How many times do you read coverage of, in newspapers where it talks as if there is one Catholic voter? At GetReligion.org, we talk all the time about, there's several different kinds of Catholic voters. I mean, there's ex-Catholic voters. There are cultural Catholic voters who go to church once or twice a year. There are Catholics who go to church on Sunday morning, but otherwise they resemble mainline Protestants more in the practice of their faith. And then there's what a Roman Catholic priest once told me called the sweats the details and goes to confession Catholic. I mean, so when you're dealing, whenever you're dealing with claims that someone is a Catholic politician, you have to figure out who they are. I mean, you know, the word gets used all kinds of different ways. There's just, you know, got to be wise.
I wonder about the politics of this, Terry, because the president has, for good or for ill, decided that health care reform is going to be a horse he wants to ride, at least for the first 6 months of his time in office.
Yeah.
And he's going to ride it as hard as he can. He's not backing down, but he seems to have gained early on in his tenure as presidency some kind of credibility with a certain segment of the Catholic voters through some high-profile connections to Roman Catholicism. Is he squandering that connection by pushing so hard on healthcare reform and acting as though he's oblivious to the concerns that rank-and-file Catholics might really have about paying for abortion and things like that?
Well, I don't think he is squandering capital with any Catholics that were already interested in him in the first place. I don't think Catholics are any more nervous about end-of-life issues and rationing issues than anybody else. I mean, what's fascinating to me at this time is that there is a health care package looming on the horizon that the Democratic left would have a lot of trouble endorsing. And ironically, some people on the evangelical left have been most responsible for talking about it. I think the Sojourners crowd, you know, would be a good example of this. For example, what if tomorrow the president were to come forward and say, we're going to propose insurance reform. We're going to propose tort reform to try to hold down one of the main things that drives up medical costs in the final weeks or months of coverage, which is, you know, the fear that you're going to be sued for malpractice, you know, if you don't run the following 10 tests. What if you automatically conceded expanded coverage for children and you came up with this co-ops thing, which you're now beginning to hear a lot, regional or statewide co-ops that cross state lines? And what if the government description of those co-ops did not mandate abortion coverage? And then what if instead of saying that you mandated end-of-life discussions with the so-called death panels, which is a simplistic way of talking about it, but that's what we're stuck with, what if instead of mandating it, you just said, we will offer free in-home care to be covered in all of this. We will offer free hospice care as built in. And we will encourage an emphasis on discussions with religious or secular non-sectarian providers of living wills and other forms of death with dignity pacts within families. I think if something like that came up tomorrow, you would hear the Catholic bishops crying Hosanna, you know, from their offices here in Washington. And I think something like that would have a serious chance to pass.
I mean, and what would it mean for the College of Catholic Bishops to say, we think the president has a great idea here?
I think it's incredible. I think it would be the difference between – it would certainly be the difference between having to jam a bill down the Republicans' throat only with Democratic votes while also having to read the Riot Act to conservative Democrats, including pro-life Democrats, of which there are quite a few in the House, and getting one that passes with, say, a 60-65% plurality.
We've got about a minute before we take a break. Why won't the president simply do that?
I don't know. I'm not saying that he won't. I'm saying that would, if he knows, he keeps saying abortion really isn't the issue here. Abortion really isn't the issue here. If he says abortion is the issue, and I'm willing to back the evangelical left, the Catholic left, and in effect, I'm not going to offend the pro-life left who helped me get elected, which is what Jim Wallis at Sojourners has been telling him, and along with E.J. Dionne in the Washington Post, don't stiff the pro-life left, of which there are some people, and especially in Congress. I don't know why. It'll be very interesting to see where he stands on that issue.
Do you think the jury of his mind is still out on that? What do you think, honestly?
I have no clue. You know, Jimmy Carter once stood up and said, no government funding for abortion, no government funding against abortion. We're going to keep the government out of this. And that was one of the things that helped create Ted Kennedy's liberal revolt against Jimmy Carter, which weakened him in his race for his second term. The left is very, very committed on that issue, just as the cultural right is.
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We'll have him for another 10 minutes on the other side of this break, talking about Roman Catholic Church and health care reform. Terry is director of the Washington Journalism Center at the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities. He writes the weekly On Religion column for Scripps Howard News Service, author of the book Pop Goes Religion, and founder of GetReligion.org. You can read Terry's columns at our website, issuesetc.org. Click on demand, issuesetc.org. When we come back from this break, let's talk about media coverage, beginning with the life, work, and death of Eunice Kennedy Shriver. We heard after her death, if you listen very, very carefully to some still small voices, how much she had done in favor of life, how pro-life and committed a Roman Catholic she really was. Why didn't we read about that in all of the endless obituaries in major news outlets? We'll have Terry's answer to that on the other side of this break. There's another way you can find out about issues, et cetera, especially if you wonder, what are they going to be talking about today? What are they going to be talking about soon? Guests that we'll have on, topics we'll be covering. Go to our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc. Facebook.com/issuesetc. Sign up to become a fan. You'll be putting us very close to, if not over, 1,800 fans so far. And you'll find out about upcoming guests and topics, interact with other Issues Etc. fans, and help promote Issues Etc. Facebook.com/issuesetc. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. More with Terry Mattingly after this.
Would you like to post your favorite Issues Etc. audio segments on your website or blog? Well, we've made it easy for you. Just go to the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, click the embed green logo, and copy and paste the embed code on your website or blog. It's just like posting a YouTube video. Embed Issues Etc. audio on your website or blog today. We love our on-demand listeners. Old theology, new technology. issuesetc.org.
When you hear the words new music for your congregation, do you automatically think of mindless praise music? Well, think again. Liturgy Solutions has new compositions for all seasons of the church year that are firmly grounded in the Reformation truths of Christ for us in word and sacrament. Check us out on the web at www.liturgysolutions.com. At Liturgy Solutions, we don't do worship, we're deep into liturgy. www.liturgysolutions.com.
Treadmill for the mind. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to God's gift of the internet, people are listening to Issues Etc. around the world.
Villa in Finland is online. Villa, welcome to Issues Etc.
This thing about forgiveness, I think Jesus forgave on the cross, and so did Stephen, and this shows only that the Holy Spirit can do that. That was what I wanted to say.
Villa, thank you very much, and thanks for listening in Finland.
Christ-centered, cross-focused talk radio for the world. Issues, etc.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start. The foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Terry Mattingly is our guest. Well, you spend a lot of time, Terry, paying attention to the media's attention to matters religious and moral. What did you make of their coverage of the life, work, death of Eunice Kennedy Shriver?
Well, to be perfectly honest with you, I got mad. This is something that doesn't happen because I'm not a guy that surprises easily. But this was one case where I got very, very upset. Because if you asked people what was the dominant issue of Eunice Kennedy Shriver's life, there's no question that you would have to say her belief in the full dignity of the handicapped, both mental and physical. And at that point, you have to say, where did that fierce conviction in human dignity come from? At that point, you would have to say her deep Roman Catholic faith. I mean, she seriously considered becoming a nun. She was a daily mass Catholic her entire adult life. At which point you'd say, huh, I wonder what she would think of Down syndrome abortion being at 90%. At which point, it's very easy to find out how outspoken she was throughout her life on issues of abortion. She was a full, enthusiastic supporter of the social teachings of the Roman Catholic Church. Okay? Now, in the obituaries that ran in the major media down the, you know, after her death, you could hunt and hunt and hunt. And even though those dots were extremely easy to connect, it's hard. You cannot avoid the Special Olympics element of her life, right? It's what everybody knows her for. You can't avoid also her role in bringing Rosemary, the mentally handicapped member of their family, of the 9 Kennedy children, of pulling Rosemary out into the open, getting the family to do more to accept her. That's how do you tell Eunice's life without then linking that to the other issue? So I frankly got mad this time on it.
Is this myopia, or is this...
I think it's the name Kennedy. And the simple fact of the matter is that if you admit that Sergeant Shriver and Eunice Kennedy Shriver are fully committed to the teachings of the Catholic Church, at that point you then have to say, what about the other Kennedys? At which point that raises questions that I just don't think the media wants to raise.
Can you explain to me as a journalist why that should matter? I mean, I know the name, I know the Camelot myth, I know all of that stuff, but why should that matter?
Well, I mean, they're a brand name, and their brand name is Boston, Hyannisport, although John F. Kennedy spent most of his young life in West Palm Beach, but that's another issue. Boston, Hyannisport, Irish, Catholic. That's a part of the Kennedy mandate, right? And if you have a chance to say that there are good Catholic Kennedys and bad Catholic Kennedys, that just raises questions that you can't, where you can't go there.
Are they safe now? I'm not trying to be facetious, but in terms of, was this the last good Catholic Kennedy, and is she gone?
You know, that's a great question. I do know that all of her children, to one degree or another, have been involved in some very good and worthy work in her aftermath. I do not know where they stand, her own children stand on that issue, but that's a great question.
Well, let's talk about...
In other words, did that cause openly pro-life stated conviction, will that die with her and Sargent?
Let's talk about some other coverage which seems disproportional, and that is of the Episcopal Church USA. It is not just kind of an occasional thing. It's almost year-round, especially lately, that you will read headlines on a weekly basis sometimes about the Episcopal Church USA in some form or another. And it's only 2 million people.
Well, and in terms of people who are actually attending the churches, it may be the figure may be more like 750,000 to 800,000. And it's an aging church, as most of the mainline world is. But, I mean, you're asking the question, why do they get so much ink? And I wrote a column about that recently. It was actually an update of an essay I wrote more than a decade earlier. And the reasons essentially hadn't changed. We're dealing with a church here that, because of the historic links to Britain and to the Church of England and to the colonies, you know, in the early history of the United States, the Episcopal/Anglican Church has always had incredible power in the American Northeast. Then you have to ask, you know, where is most of the major media in the United States? You'd say American Northeast. Then you say, if you're going to do coverage, what do you need? Well, journalists tend to worship politics. The Episcopal Church talks an awful lot about politics, and its stands on political issues are almost always identical to those favored by journalists. Then you throw in the fact that their churches are right downtown in major cities. They're very convenient. Then, not only that, they photograph well. And do not underestimate the importance of that. I mean, how exciting is a meeting of the Missouri Synod Lutheran Church?
Very unexciting. I can assure you, very unexciting.
And the Southern Baptist Convention even more so. I mean, you know, at least charismatics wave their hands around in the air. It gives you something to photograph. Well, what if you had a chance to photograph people who look like Roman Catholic bishops, except half of them are women? You now have a couple of them that are gay, and they're doing what you want them to do, and they look like Catholics, and they're the good guys. So, I mean, to some degree, the Episcopal Church is just created. It's like God's gift to journalism. Or the goddess's gift to journalism, or whatever, I mean, wherever you want to go with that metaphor. In my column, I finally just said the Episcopal Church is perfect. Episcopalian, the leadership of the Episcopal Church, for the most part, looks like Catholics and acts like journalists. What could be better than that?
All right. You raise an intriguing, not overtly, but subtly in your column on this issue, that Gene Robinson might have to face the fact that he's going to have to share the media spotlight with another gay bishop at some time in the future here, or other gay, openly gay clergy and leaders of the church. Do you think he'll be able to take it?
Oh, sure. More the merrier. I don't think this guy, believe it or not, I really don't think he's more a media hog than many people on both the left and the right. I think that to some degree the media is ringing his doorbell. I mean, the question, you know, he's been, you know, at Obama's side. He's done a lot of things for such a time. You know, his entire diocese is the size of a pretty typically sized Southern Baptist megachurch in Houston. Yeah, I mean, there are literally thousands of congregations in the Southern Baptist Convention that are the size of this man's entire diocese. But it's symbolic. Very important, and there's no question that in terms of the U.S. hierarchy, he has won the game. That's news. You have to admit that's news.
Well, it certainly is news. I'm wondering, as the Episcopal Church USA continues to dwindle, and now by attrition of, in some cases, entire dioceses, how much longer can the media keep the spotlight on this ever smaller and smaller Protestant denomination?
You read any British papers lately? How many Anglicans are actually attending worship on a typical Sunday morning in Britain? Yet, how much coverage does the Church of England get, say, in comparison to the Roman Catholic Church, which is larger now in Britain?
You say, and you just said it so much better, yet again, the religion of journalism is politics.
Mm-hmm.
So, generally, how can we expect that to color journalistic coverage of matters religious? With 1 minute.
Well, I'll just give you, thank you, 60 seconds. Okay, so the Pope gets up and delivers a long and intricate speech on a topic like health care. From the perspective of the typical journalist covering that, first of all, you have to quote something that's understandable to your audience, and the popes are rarely producers of sound bites. But you're looking for whatever affects American politics, aren't you? That's the definition of news. Even if it's a massive papal address on, you know, a global issue, it's the local news hook. It's politics.
Do you think it's getting better or worse with only 30 seconds?
What is the pronoun in that sense? It getting, you mean the situation with the press?
Yeah, the press's coverage of matters religious.
Better in some places, worse in others. All of it being affected, of course, by the tremendous cutbacks in some major top 20 market newspaper staffs. So we're losing some very good religion reporters. At the same time, we have a lot of extremely humble editors right now who are willing to listen to what their readers want. This would be a great time for people to call up their local editors and say, I think we deserve better religion coverage.
Terry Mattingly is director of the Washington Journalism Center at the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities. He writes the weekly On Religion column for Scripps Howard News Service. He's author of the book Pop Goes Religion, and he's founder of GetReligion.org. You can purchase his book Pop Goes Religion under the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org. Terry, thank you again.
Glad to be back with you again.
One of the ways that you can help us promote issues, etc., and let other people know the unique perspective, the unique guests, the unique topics, the unique nature of issues, etc., in Christian talk radio, is by going to our website tonight, issuesetc.org. We have so much there for you, but we're asking you to do us a favor here. Go to our website, issuesetc.org, click promote, and you're going to find there an Issues Etc. YouTube video that we would like you to send to 10 of your friends, your coworkers, fellow parishioners, family members, and let them know what Issues Etc. is all about, too. Go to our website, issuesetc.org, click promote, and we'll enter your name for a drawing on the 28th of this month for a $100 gift certificate to Concordia Publishing House. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.